One of the big differences in the McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King programs is that they depend on third-party audits. Traditionally, many of the trade associations have guidelines for animal care, animal welfare, but there was no enforcement mechanism, and in some cases, it was simply done by something like an affidavit, where the farmer would simply send in and say, "I have completed the form and have passed it successfully," and would use a trade association seal on the product. So we see that method actually is still used today in by the United Egg producers on table eggs. On eggs that you buy in the store may have an animal welfare. That we felt was not that credible, and so we went to this third-party audit, which is what McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's do as buyer specifications. The other point I want to make is that these are buyer specifications. They are not set up by a government agency. They have the wonderful flexibility that they can be adjusted easily. One doesn't have to go through the whole regulatory process as we go through this. But as I had mentioned earlier, there was a bit of a horse race, and the rest of the industry said, "Wait a minute, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's do this together. Let's join forces." And so the two trade associations, the Food Marketing Institute, which represents the supermarkets, and the National Council of Chain Restaurants, which represents chain restaurants, pulled together an animal welfare committee, provided resources to begin to review this, what was out there. And the way this process worked is that they then put together this technical committee, and a little later we'll show you who's on that. And they began to review the standards that various trade associations had already done. And in fact, most of the large trade associations for animal agriculture have very good animal care, animal welfare guidelines. In a few cases, the technical committee did not agree with the standards of the trade association groups, which were also, in most cases, a mix of scientists and industry people. Our committee from FMINCCR was actually only academics. It was not also industry people. And the biggest controversy in the course of evaluating all of these documents seemed to be the ammonia level in indoor facilities. One of the challenges in indoor facilities is air quality, which affects both the animals and actually also affects the humans who are expected to care for the animal. And what we then decided in negotiating with the trade associations was that we would use the OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration's level of ammonia, which is 25 parts per million, as our starting point. And after negotiating with many of these trade associations, which had liked a little higher level, we did settle on the 25 parts per million, which is what people are allowed to be exposed to for up to 8 hours. And we want people in the facilities looking at the animals, so it ought to be safe for humans, which the animal welfare of humans is something we also ought to be considering. And we felt that it was justified from the science as an acceptable level to start with. Part of the challenge with ammonia levels, and I think it's important to point this out, is that it is a function mathematically of essentially a linear increase. So the higher the ammonia level, the less the animal health. But there is no bright line, there is no absolute cutoff. And so again, this is the kind of issue which is not black and white. 20 parts per million ammonia would be better. 25 parts is what we've settled on. 30 parts would be a little worse. Right now, 25 parts per million is an improvement, and therefore, we're going to start here and hopefully in the future be able to bring it to a lower level. So this has been an interesting process of a technical committee interacting with a number of the trade associations to create a guideline, an animal care guideline that everybody is pretty comfortable with, and then taking those and putting them into audit forms, and then beginning the process of training auditors. One of the areas I want to talk about with respect to the auditor is the training and a little bit about how it works on the farm. One of the decisions we came to is that people doing the auditing ought to be properly trained, so that the general requirement for an on-farm auditor is either a biology, animal science, or a similar major. For the slaughterhouse, we actually went further and realized we wanted people who've had some exposure to slaughter. Generally, that would be animal science majors who've taken a course such as a meat science course, so that they are comfortable and have seen slaughter previously and have thought about it and hopefully come to terms with it. That's been a more controversial issue, is getting the auditing system up and going, and that is a work in progress. So hopefully in the next year or two, we'll begin to see more of the audits happening. Some are happening, but fairly limited at this point. But we're looking to the future as we bring the final group on board. Right now, of the major industries, we still have one that is not completely finalized. It's taken a lot longer than we've expected, but that's common in these kinds of processes. With respect to on the farm, one of the concerns has been biosecurity, and we make it very clear to the producers that the biosecurity issues need to be dealt with, and that our auditors are expected to comply with all biosecurity requirements that are part of a farm's operation. That's good management practice by the farms, and obviously the last thing an animal welfare auditor should be doing is interfering with that process. On the other hand, the auditors are also told that if a farm with an auditor present is doing anything that is totally unacceptable, which is some of the gross abuses, basically negligence or strong abuse of animals, such as using an electric prod on a sensitive part of the animal, putting it, for example, in the eye, would be such a large violation of animal welfare that the welfare auditor is instructed to actually leave at that point. However, in other cases, when they've gone through the audit, they will be a debriefing. The auditors will indicate what are major and minor non-compliances, and there will be procedures for the farm or facility to correct these. There will be an appeals procedure. One of the interesting things we're trying to institute is that the auditors will be audited. That is, people like Temple Grandin and other folks with PhDs or other significant experience will go out occasionally with the auditors to check on the auditors. Another point in this whole process that has been of some concern is who owns the data, who sees the data. And the process we are trying to set in place would be that the producer, the facility owner, owns the data. The other point I want to make is that there is no passing score. Because of the antitrust laws in the United States, the decision was made that each user of the data would have the right to decide what was a passing or not passing score. Within the framework, again, that we would not accept any gross abuse of animals, and there are a collection of abuse standards that are failures, but the actual passing will be up to the individual stores. With respect to those facilities and other companies besides the three I've continually mentioned, a number of our large supermarkets and some of our fast food chains have already indicated publicly and made a public commitment that as soon as the system comes into place, they will use it. so that we believe that a large number of major supermarkets and major fast food chains, other than the big three in the hamburger world, will use these audits once all the bits and pieces are in place. We have also been going out and talking to other groups about supporting this idea. One of the groups that early on said, go ahead and do it, we'll support you when it's done, is the National Restaurant Association. So one of the groups you may have noticed that sort of was missing were the individual restaurants. They have said that they're happy to use our guidelines and not planning to do anything separate, and so they will be covered. One of the groups that you may have noticed is not listed when you consider chain restaurants and supermarkets is the individually owned restaurants. The National Restaurant Association was approached early on and simply decided that it made more sense for the other two groups to do the work and not confuse it by adding another group in the mix. And so they just simply decided that when the time came, they would be happy to accept what we did in the FMI-NCCR context, and that they would not do anything independently. The other group that I'm aware of that is absent from participation is the traditional food service, schools, hospitals, and groups like that. And we have approached them through their organizations, one, the University School Food Service through a group called NACUFS, National Association of College and University Food Service. And we're also working on a project with a group called Sacred Foods, which is an attempt nationally to try to have the church and religious groups that run hospitals and elementary schools, et cetera, to begin to think about also participating in various standards. So the hope is that we can improve animal welfare across the board in commercial agriculture as a baseline standard for all facilities. And I think that would be a wonderful thing.